We're doing the book of Nehemiah. We're up to what they call the fourth chapter, the fifth pasuk. A quick recap of what we've learned so far. We learned how Koresh, the second king of the Persian Mede Empire, gave license to the Jews to ascend and rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. With his license, Zerubbabel ascended, and with him 41,000 Jews. Then Koresh was convinced it's a bad idea, the Jews will lead a rebellion against him. He put a pause on the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash. For the remainder of Koresh's lifetime, the Jews remain in Israel, and they are consistently looted by their enemies, and they cannot build any fortification nor the Beit HaMikdash. We had 1 year of service in the Beit HaMikdash before it was all put to a halt. The Beit HaMikdash is not rebuilt. The city is not rebuilt. We run through the period of Koresh and then Achashverosh, and then after 14 years of Achashverosh's reign, Achashverosh passes away, and we move on to Achashverosh's son from Esther, Daryavish, Darius the Mede. Daryavish gives us license to continue rebuilding. We learned how Haggai and Zechariah told the people, build. The people build. Their enemies come and question. They go back to Daryavish, and Daryavish gives them license and says, that's okay, let them build. Then Daryavish sent Ezra to ensure the Jews are observant of Torah and mitzvot. Ezra comes in with a very small group, 1,000 to 2,000 people, is his ascent to Israel. And Ezra discovers that many of the people had intermarried, and the conclusion of the part of the book that the Christians call Ezra was how Ezra convinces the people, or they agree with him, and they divorce their non-Jewish wives, and we have the Jewish people living in Israel and moving forward in their observance of Torah. Then we began the section of the book, which is Nehemiah speaking. And Nehemiah goes back. Nehemiah is the butler before the king Daryavish, the same Daryavish who told Ezra he could go and told the Jews they could rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Nehemiah is his butler. And Nehemiah gets word from Hanani, one of his friends, that the Jews in Israel are suffering terribly. They're being looted by their enemies. The walls are broken. And when Nehemiah is serving Daryavish the king, Nehemiah looks upset. And Daryavish asks him, why do you look upset? Are you in the process of assassinating me? And Nehemiah realizes his life is on the line. And so Nehemiah says, how could I not be upset? I know that the city my forefathers are buried in is destroyed and the walls are destroyed. And of course I'm upset. So the Daryavish has the Shegal sitting next to him. We learned the Malbim that is Queen Esther, his mother, sitting next to him. And she tells him, son, do it. And so Daryavish tells Nehemiah, how much is it going to cost? How long do you want to go? And then he gives Nehemiah the backing and the soldiers, and Nehemiah ascends to Israel, and he is given the responsibility to govern over the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash. So Nehemiah does not tell the people the license that the king has given him. On the contrary, he shows up, he understands what's going on. After 3 days of seeing what's going on, he gets up in the middle of the night, he goes with his men, and they break down the wall. And the next morning, people wake up, and they see that the wall that they thought was worth something has been broken. And by so doing, Nehemiah inspires them to rebuild the wall. What Nehemiah had done that night, breaking the walls down, teaches them, hey, we don't really have good walls here. And then Nehemiah says, and by the way, the king sent me here with a lot of money and a lot of materials to rebuild the wall. And then the people started rebuilding the wall, every person rebuilding the part that was opposite them. And then they've reached the halfway mark. And the enemies of Israel who have been mocking them repeatedly realize that something real is happening here. Jerusalem's about to be fortified. And so our enemies from the north and the south and the east unite. And now they are coming to attack Jerusalem. At exactly this time, the people of Judea come to Nehemiah and say, we can't anymore. We've been working so hard rebuilding the walls, we can't. And so where we left off last night was this idea that whenever something really positive is about to happen, whenever something in our lives is about to become great, we are faced with the threat of everything falling apart and losing everything. We said that this is true in many realms of our life, that Hashem puts us opposite something where it seems like I'm about to lose everything, and that's where Nehemiah is. He's reached the point where he's going to make it. He can rebuild the city. He's halfway done. They've actually accomplished something. And it's at that moment that the Jewish people turn on him and say, we can't anymore. And it's at that moment that the enemies from without come and attack. And now Nehemiah has to refocus and figure out, how am I going to make this into the turning point where we will succeed? And I mentioned last night that there's a book on this concept by the founder of Intel, the idea of inflection points, that every successful endeavor finds itself at a moment where it seems like all is lost. It seems like things are going to self-destruct. And it's at that moment that it's a sink and swim, or swim. And when you make the right decision, then you come out of that moment much more powerful. You come out of that moment and you soar. And there's also a book by a Jew. What's his name? I forgot his name. A very good book called The Hard Thing About Hard Things. The Hard Thing About Hard Things. Ben Horowitz. He built a Fortune 500 company, a multi-billion dollar company, and he describes over there numerous things. One of the most encouraging things that I read in his book, I listened to it, audio books on tape, one of the most encouraging things that I heard in his book was that as CEO of his company, he fires himself multiple times a day. There are multiple times a day where he thinks to himself, I should not be at the helm. I am not good for this company. I should not be the leader here. So until I heard that, I thought I was the only one who feels that way. And then I discovered that, oh, so other people who have responsibility look back and say, boy, I shouldn't be here. I'm making so many mistakes. And it was a huge encouragement for me, saying there were two other very good points in that book. One is his description of this concept from the founder of Intel, the idea that his company was about to be worthless. And within 3-4 months, they were able to make it a multi-billion dollar company. But it required standing up to the moment where it looked like everything was lost. And everything was lost where they were holding. And the second important idea that I learned from his book was that he writes there, I should have learned it from Chazal, but he writes there, choose to judge people favorably. He writes, there's a choice we make. And in our dealings with other people, it's a good idea to choose to judge them favorably. So that was interesting to me. Coming back to Nehemiah. So Nehemiah's at that point. Everything looks like it's about to fall apart. And he's got real threats. And the goal of the enemies of Israel is to annihilate whoever's there. Meaning this is a fight for keeps. Their goal, as Nehemiah records, was to come in and ensure there would not remain an ember of a Jew in Jerusalem. And we're up to Pasuk Vav. Vayhi kashabaya yehudim hayoshevim etzlam. So the Jews came. And what they see is just beyond the wall, the enemies have gathered. There's an army that's preparing to attack. And within that enemy, we said, there were Jews who lived all over, north, south, and east. There were Jews who lived amongst our enemies, and they were part of the army. They were part of the units that were coming to attack us. ויאמרו לנו 10 פעמים מכל המקומות אשר תשובו עלינו. And they warned us. We got 10 different warnings from different places. They're coming, they're coming. Meaning the Jews who were part of the enemy army sent us warnings, you're about to be attacked. Recognize that your enemies from the north and the south and the east are approaching to attack you. And they warned us so that we knew what angle the attack was coming from today, what angle the attack was coming from tomorrow. Even though they were part of the army of the enemy, they would send us word where the attack is going to be focused that day. Va'amid mitachtiyot lamakum. And so when I'd get word from them, so then I'd prepare the troops on that side of the wall. למקום מאחרי לחומה בצחיחים, I would prepare the troops on top of boulders or behind the walls. ועמיד אתם למשפחות, I prepared the nation from those who had good weapons, from those who were good warriors. I prepared each family had to fight for itself, im chalvotehim, romcheihim, v'kashetotehim, with their swords, their spears, and their bows. So what Nehemiah is doing is also, he's encouraging the Jews to fight as best as they can, because they have their back to the walls. When you go to war, and the family's there, and you realize it's us or nothing, it's a different battle. When you got everything to lose. So that's what Nehemiah is setting up. Yes?
Do we know the timeline of how long all this process took from him talking to
We'll see. He will tell us. He will tell us. We'll get there. We began with year 20. So he came up. The beginning of the book was year 20. He got word at 20. Daryavish, yeah. The Navi calls him, Nehemiah calls him Artaxasta. The Gemara says it was the 20th year of Daryavish. This was... So, va'ere va'akum va'omar el ha'chorim. When I saw the enemies coming, I would go and tell the leaders ve'el ha'seganim ve'el yeter ha'am al tiru mipneihem. I gave them pep talks. I gave them talks of encouragement. Don't be scared. Et Hashem ha'gadol va'nora zechoru. Remember Hashem who is great and mighty. Ve'ilachamu alachechem b'nechem uvnotechem. Fight for your brothers. Fight for your children. Neshechem, fight for your wives uvatechem in your homes. So Nehemiah would go around giving pep talks. Vayhi kasher shamu oyvenu ki noda lanu vayafer elokim tatzatam. When they heard that we were well aware they were coming to attack, and that we were prepared to fight back. They were sure they'd come in, we would be unprepared, and they would attack. So battalion one heads to the northern front, and suddenly they see there's a whole army waiting for them. The Jews are prepared. So then they come to the southern flank, they see there's a whole army prepared. They're waiting for them. Manashov kulanu elachoma ish el melachto. And when they realize that they can't... they can't win us, so they stopped, and we went back to work. So the enemies pause. They're not interested in war if there's going to be someone to fight back. They were interested in a pogrom. Now they see that the 42,000 Jews in Jerusalem have prepared for war against them. So they take a step back. And they were right. Had we not been tipped off by the Jews who were in the enemy army, then they would have succeeded. So now they take a step back. We go back to work. From that day onward, if things were hard beforehand, now things were doubly hard. Half the workers during the work time would stand there armed. They couldn't build without taking half the people standing there with weapons. Ve'asarim acharei kol bet Yehuda. And you had behind them the officers who were overseeing to ensure that we were really ready for war. Meaning, you had the generals there. You know, during the Cold War, President Reagan ensured that at every moment there were 100 pilots in the planes ready to take off for battle. The state of the U.S. Army was that on 1 second notice, he could have 100 planes in the sky. 100. That was the state during the Cold War. At any moment, on a moment's notice. So what Nehemiah is describing is a situation where it wasn't just soldiers with weapons. Nehemiah had the generals there prepared to lead a war. What's Nehemiah doing? He's taking a situation which could have been the end of all the Jews in Jerusalem, and creating from that situation the inspiration to build. If the people see, hey, our enemies came, we're almost finished, now suddenly problem one resolves problem two. Because now the people are encouraged to build the wall, right? And that's very often the situation we have in life, where all the problems seem like they're going to destroy us. But if we can stop and think, we start juggling the problems so that this one problem is the solution for the other. הבונים בחומה והנוסעים בסבל ומסים באחת ידו עושה במלאכה ואחת מחזק את השלח. You had people working with one hand, and the other hand was holding their sword. והבונים ישחרבו אסורים על מותניו ובונים והתוקע בשופר אצלי. You had other people who were building, and in their job, they were building with both hands, but even those workers had their sword on now when they were working. They were going to work, ready to go to war. And I, says Nehemiah, who was watching over all this, had right next to me the man who would blow, who would sound the warning, the man who had the shofar. So I said to the leaders, the ones overseeing and the nation, there's a lot of work. And now we are working on the wall, and there's a challenge here, because we're building a large wall, and our troops are separate. We have some people on the north, some people on the east. So the rule is like this. You hear the shofar blowing, leave your post and come and join us. We don't have enough troops, really. Elokeinu yilachem lanu. Hashem is fighting for us. But you have to know that if you hear the shofar, I'm going to keep manning the walls. And whenever you hear the shofar, come to me. Come to the place. And we continued working. Half the workers were holding their spears from the crack of dawn till the stars came out. I gave the following rule. All the builders had to sleep inside Jerusalem. And so that way they couldn't come and break apart the walls. We would take turns sleeping. You had half the people taking guards at night, and the other people were sleeping. We had guard duty throughout the night, and the workers would sleep next to the wall, so that we were prepared for war. We never got undressed, says Nehemiah. Me and my lads, and the people who were in charge of the guard duty, we would never take off our clothing to go to sleep. We didn't take them off to launder them either. He says the threat was so real that at this period, we never took off our clothing. We remained clothed and ready for battle. That's what a friend of mine told me in the army. When you go out for a mission, so the first day and a half, you can sense that people around you have a foul smell. After half a week or a week, you don't smell it anymore. The whole battalion has the smell. You don't smell it anymore. You're out. No one's thinking about a shower. And we're going to have to pause here, go up to Ma'ariv and Mitzvah after dinner. We'll reconvene in the front of the Beit Midrash.